What is being done by Governor Kirk's Project Concern? Why did Governor Kirk choose Gainesville as a model city for his poverty program? Can a black man work with the white community and maintain his status with the black community? How can there be more communication between blacks and whites? You'll get answers to these and other questions as we look into the Florida future, poverty and race relations. These programs giving perspectives on the state's next 10 years are produced at Radio Center, the University of Florida in Gainesville. This program in the series was produced on a grant from the Florida Department of Education. Our guest is Neil Butler, chairman of Gainesville's Human Relations Advisory Council and a task force chairman for the Coordinating Council of the Concerned. Here to talk with him is Jack Detweiler.
Mr. Butler, why was Gainesville chosen by the governor as Florida's first model city in the state's anti-poverty program?
I can't be certain why Governor Kirk chose this city as the first anti-poverty program, but I believe it's because we already had in our midst a nucleus of concerned citizens, as demonstrated by the things we had done. Ours is neither an agricultural nor an industrial community, but cosmopolitan with progressive atmosphere, and I feel that this progressive atmosphere is conducive to development of this type program.
You're chairman of the Gainesville City Commission's Human Relations Advisory Council. What is the job of such a council?
The Human Relations Advisory Council is just that. It's an advisory board. We have no enforcement power. Our power is in that of persuasion. We seek to appeal to the sense of fairness in the people in solving the local conflicts and racially motivated discrepancies.
You were one of the leaders recently in ending discrimination at one of Gainesville's local bars. Could you tell us how this came about?
We know that there exists some pockets of segregation. We, at some time ago, the Human Relations Advisory Board attempted to get this establishment to voluntarily desegregate unsuccessfully. At the same time, another local bar consented and voluntarily did desegregate. This dates back as far as 1960 when Mr. James Richardson was mayor. He at that time personally contacted the owner who lives in Orlando with an attempt to try to voluntarily get compliance, which he was unsuccessful in doing. Recently, because of picketing, which brought on racial unrest and the following threat of trouble in that area, the local citizens became concerned, and Mr. Thomas Coward, Albert Daniels, and myself worked between the militant black forces and the city to try to solve this. Mayor Ted Williams, Chief Police Joiner, Representative Bill Andrews, and City Attorney Arthur Fagan worked with us and, in fact, flew to Orlando for a meeting with the owner of this bar, out of which came a very cordial and meaningful solution. And the owner related that he did not know he was one of the few establishments maintaining segregation. And through the efforts of the mayor and the other officials, he agreed to end the segregation policy.
What are some of the other things that the Human Relations Advisory Council has done?
Recently, we became, in addition to the Human Relations Advisory Council, the Grievance Committee for the Citizens of Gainesville. In this capacity, we recently investigated the charges of segregation at Sunland Training Center. And the state director has a report of this. And other things we've done, many of which have not been publicized, have all been on a level of agreeing to change the atmosphere in the city. much of which we do not bother to publicize.
I know that you're a member of another organization in the community that goes under the name of the Coordinating Council of the Concerned. You are a task force chairman in this organization. Could you tell us a little bit about the organization in general and then a little bit about the work of your specific task force?
The Coordinating Council of Concern was born out of frustration. Shortly after the assassination of Dr. King, many people became increasingly concerned, and members, representatives from various organizations joined together to try to end some of the social ills we have locally. From this, we developed a type of task force approach, each task force dealing with a certain area. I'm chairman of the task force on neighborhood development and the neighborhood survey. In this respect, we have teams of concerned people who are working in certain outlined areas in the city of need, and we had intended to just go into these areas and find out what was needed in a sort of one-shot deal. Now we have gone a step further, and these people are returning to the same areas and creating a kind of alliance where they help these people, they return and advise them and direct them to areas of solution.
What kind of reception do your team members get?
These teams are predominantly white persons, and of course initially there is a degree of rejection, apprehension at least, but in our new approach of returning to the same area, the people tend to understand that they really are there to help and are not assuming the role of the great white father, and as such, they have been able to do much towards eradication of these inequities.
Where do you draw your team members from? Are there any supply of volunteers for working in poverty areas?
The only requirement is that someone cares. We have represented a very broad-based group, labor, student government, official city government, and particularly church groups, social clubs, all these people who care.
Can a black man work with the white community and maintain his leadership among the black community?
This is becoming increasingly possible. At one time, this was a difficult thing because once the Negro was associated with the establishment, so to speak, he was quite often isolated from the rank-and-file Negro. But more and more, the Negro is beginning to recognize that the Negro must and can work with the white and still maintain his status in the Negro community.
You've worked closely with the governor's Operation Concern. Can you describe some of the programs with which you worked directly, and then maybe discuss some of the other projects that have come about because the governor singled out Gainesville as a model city?
I have personally been responsible for coordinating the nursing for both the health screening and the mobile dental unit, which you've been in the city for several weeks. In this, we have had complete cooperation of the local people. The governor's forces have provided a nucleus around which we have rallied to the cause and provided volunteer help. The aim, as I see it, of this is just that, to provide a catalyst that the local people can rally around. One of our greatest foes locally has been apathy in the local people, and I think with the governor's office behind us, we've been able to generate some momentum that I think it's really helped. I think the greatest contribution in this area has been in the health field. I do understand that there have been some dilapidated houses torn down, and there has been some help with the daycare centers and the nurseries, but I think the greatest contribution locally has been in the area of health field.
Mr. Butler, this program is being heard all over Florida. Based on your experience thus far with the Gainesville effort, what advice would you give people in other communities who might want to expand their efforts towards helping the poor in their community?
I think the basic underlying problem is communication. The first and foremost and an absolute necessity is the establishment of communication between the races. Once this is done and both races are able to talk freely and frankly to each other, then the problems can be identified and there can be a cooperative effort to solutions for these problems. Until one recognizes the problems of the other, there can be no solution. So basically, I think this is the number one thing. The other thing is to accept the fact that there are differences. The first step towards solving a problem is to admit the problem exists, which we've for so long denied. Both white and black have seen desegregation as the Negro going into the white society, so to speak, but never the white going into the black society. As a result of this, many Negroes now know more about white society than ever before, but few whites know anything about the black society, and this has worked against communications.
Mr. Butler, you use this term communications, and we hear it a lot that this is a major problem between ages, between races, between many groups. How do you go about creating more communications? What is the stimulus to good communications?
Well, the initial stimulus is a desire to establish it. This first step is to go into or invite into groups of either race, the opposite race, that is, to allow one race to express its feelings to the other. One good step locally that has been initiated, the local churches are exchanging pulpits, that is, Negro ministers are going into the white churches, predominantly the white churches, and the white ministers are going into the predominantly Negro churches. This might be considered the proverbial drop in the bucket, but it's a start. I think this is one way. Other ways is to invite Negro speakers to predominantly or completely white clubs, and vice versa. Have Negro communities invite white speakers who know something about the problems. I think this is the way we begin to establish communications. I do think progress here has been great and that much has been done.
Neil Butler, chairman of Gainesville's Human Relations Advisory Council, has talked with Jack Detweiler on this program in the series The Florida Future. This program was produced on a grant from the Florida Department of Education. The series is prepared for broadcast at Radio Center, College of Journalism and Communications, the University of Florida, Gainesville. This is Hank Connor.